to preach. It's not even continuous with the series we had been preparing on the Articles of Faith, but a new sermon was brewing this week for me, and this is it. It's been a week of rapid change. A week ago, online church was not on our radar, and yet here we are. There you are. Most of us have been spending the latter part of this week processing a lot of grief, anxiety, shock, and loss. This microscopic virus called COVID-19 has wreaked havoc on a lot of the stability of our day-to-day lives. In an unprecedented action, all publicly funded schools in Ontario have been closed for the next 3 weeks, 2 more weeks past March break. The sports world has shut down, the NBA, the NHL, March Madness, the Little League. Our Prime Minister and his wife are in self-quarantine because Sophie has COVID-19. March break trips have been canceled or cut short, and self-quarantine looms on the horizon for many who have recently traveled, and for those vulnerable to infection. And social media has exploded with lots and lots of conversation around COVID-19. Some helpful, most not. Everywhere I turn, a new event or resource is canceled. And then we have this weird obsession with toilet paper in a panic-driven, hoarding-style shopping blitz that the last day or two has seen. We are destabilized, anxious, and uncertain about the future right now. And in our home, we have felt the hit. Tobias was to have played with the Windsor Symphony last night, and while the concert was live-streamed, the children and youth were left out of the program. Our other extracurriculars are canceled for the time being. And one of my best friends in Toronto lives with a chronic respiratory and immune disease, and she's in self-quarantine. My brother is in the sound business, resourcing concerts and events, and his business is hit hard by the social distancing occurring right now. Our collective grief and loss and uncertainty is real. And you have your own stories. And as pastors, we're ready to hear how COVID-19 is affecting you. We really wrestled with this idea of holding church online. It was not a decision taken lightly, and we're planning to be creative in spiritual care in this season in as many ways as we can imagine how. But as we made this decision, several faith-based anchors helped orient me. And one of the most significant for me was represented by this growth curve. I don't know if you can see it at all. Forgive my low tech here. I didn't have time to get media integrated into my sermon. And it's this curve, and you probably have seen it if you're online. It's this curve is what will happen if the exponential growth curve of COVID-19 without social distancing. This is our healthcare system capacity, and this represents all the people who will be traumatized without care or without sufficient care, and the doctors and nurses overstressed. And this represents what might happen, what we hope to happen, if we practice aggressive social distancing now. And so it comes with a hashtag and an urge for people to get on board with social distancing called Flatten the Curve. I've added two hashtags, Love Your Neighbor and our very own hashtag, We the North Church. When we were at school, we talked about getting ahead of the curve. For a 40-something like me with kids at home, we're not at high risk for COVID-19 fatality or really a serious illness. But seeing that curve made me realize how my participation in the curve could prevent exposure and risk for the most vulnerable in our community. And my faith spidey senses started vibrating. This is called love, people. This is called love. When we're staying home, doing nothing, giving up much, grieving much, we are doing this as a great cultural experiment of love. And it reminded me of this story that Jesus once told. You may have heard it too. Jesus was talking with some religious people, and they were asking him some questions. And he was asking them some questions. That was the way it went. And one asked him how to get on God's good side, and Jesus rebounded the question back to him. What do you think? What does Scripture tell you? And the one who'd asked the question answered, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus agrees, yes, go with that. That's it. But the one with questions had still one more question. But who is my neighbor? And Jesus didn't answer that question with another question. He answered it with a story. And the story honors the question as one we must all answer. Who is our neighbor? I think Jesus asked so many questions and told so many stories because we as thinking and feeling people need to work out these answers for ourselves in our own circumstances and in our own lives. We have to do our own faith work. And here's the story. There was a man traveling from Jericho to Jerusalem, and on the way he was met by bandits. He was robbed and wounded and left to die at the side of the road. The first two people to find him were religious people heading to Jerusalem, first a priest, then a Levite, and they both passed the wounded man by. Then a Samaritan going the other way met the man, and here's what you need to know about Samaritans. They were the enemy people that Jews, like the people Jesus was telling the story to, like Jesus, didn't associate with, eat with, or even touch. The Samaritan then tends to the man's wounds, puts the man on his own donkey, takes him to a safe space where he can be cared for, and the Samaritan pays the bill. And Jesus follows up his story with his question, who was neighbor to that man? And the story doesn't leave us with ambiguity here. The one who showed mercy. Go and do likewise, says Jesus. I believe we've all been each of the characters in Jesus' story. We've all been the priest and the Levite passing by a person in need, so caught up in our own lives, our own busyness, our own concerns to even notice sometimes, or even to feel responsible to act. Despite our faith, we've not always put it into action. I'm also confident that we have been that Samaritan, pouring out our gifts and resources to one whose need we recognize and take some responsibility for. I've heard stories of this. I know there are stories yet to be told, stories that may never be told. God bless you for these stories. Sadly, we have also caused harm to others, like the thieves and robbers, though this, I trust, we have often done without malice aforethought, less boldly than those thieves and robbers. But we've wounded people with our words and deeds, what we have done and what we have left undone. And we have been the ones wounded beside the road, feeling vulnerable, hopeless, and fearful, in need of assistance from our neighbor. I have been all these characters, sometimes all in a day or a week. Who is our neighbor? Who is yours? Watching the spread of this virus from epidemic to pandemic has demonstrated once again that we live in an increasingly interconnected world. I'd remembered the expression, when a butterfly flaps its wings on the other side of the world, it causes a storm in the other. I'd remembered it as when a butterfly sneezes, and it seemed apropos to this pandemic. I don't know anyone personally in Wuhan, China. No one I know personally is in Italy, Spain, or Iran. But that virus is coming to Canada, person to person, because as human beings, we are all increasingly connected. We are all neighbors. And this is not a time to judge who is at fault here. This is not China's fault, or Iran's, or Italy's fault, or Europe's. It's not the face of the US or its president. We're all in this together. We're all called to respond. Now, Jesus' story is told from the perspective of the wounded man. And that perspective is not accidental. Jesus doesn't begin the story with, a Levite went on a journey, and on that journey he met a man who was wounded. And he doesn't begin the story with the Samaritan setting out and meeting the stranger at the side of the road. No, Jesus begins with the man who's on a journey and who is robbed and left at the side, wounded and in need. Our focus and attention throughout this story is on the need of the wounded one, whom Jesus will not let us ignore. When we follow Jesus, our hearts and minds become attuned to the one needing healing and hope. So our focus and attention is on the one who is wounded, the one Jesus wants us to see. When we follow Jesus, our hearts and minds become attuned to the one needing healing and hope. The weary, the wounded, the ones in need get center stage. And so it is today. The focus of flattening the curve, slowing the spread of disease, socialization, is love. Our focus and attention is on the needs of the ones most at risk, whom Jesus will not let us ignore. And the most at risk are those with compromised immune systems, those who are older, and if you think about it, that's a lot of people. Romans 15, verses 1 to 2 reminds us that the strong must bear up the weak. For many of us, these choices are made less about selfishness and more about protecting others from risk. Many of us are finding ourselves adrift with fear and anxiety gaining a significant threshold. This is understandable. Our worlds are changing so rapidly, and the changes being asked of us are so huge, especially when the need seems at the moment distant from us, impersonal and as yet largely theoretical and hypothetical here in Essex County. Yet our hearts in faith can and must become more and more strongly anchored in God's love. God's love is our secret weapon against fear these days. Neighbor love. 1 John 4:18 says, "There's no fear in love, for perfect love casts out fear." John was onto something because psychologist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, of the grief stages fame, says we cannot feel love and fear together at exactly the same time. They're opposites. If we're in fear, we're not in a place of love. When we're in a place of love, we cannot be in a place of fear. 1 Peter 5, verse 7 says, "Cast all your anxiety upon God because he cares for you." 2 Timothy 1, verse 7 reminds us, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and of sound mind." The Heidelberg Catechism makes this faith statement before all others. What is your only comfort in life and in death? That I am not my own, but belong with body and soul, both in life and in death, to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. People of God, we are not our own, but we belong to God, and together we are God's body on earth. We are connected in ways large and small, physical and spiritual. As we weather these changes enacted by social distancing, let us cast aside expressions of fear, choosing instead to embody neighbor love, just in a different way than we're used to. Let us rise to the challenges of these ever-changing days in new and creative ways. If we can't worship in person, worship online with us. Leave us a heart emoji so we know you're here. Participate in conversation on our Facebook page. Check in on your actual, factual neighbors. Leave a loaf of love bread on the porch with a note and your number in case they need your help. Make phone calls, send texts and emails to express your care. Perhaps you can deliver supplies to someone who is or will be in quarantine with a note of love. Resist actions of fear and panic. Resist greed, selfishness, and hoarding. These go against the gospel. Remember Jesus' story embodying neighbor love, and keep the ones in need at the center of the story. And when we are the ones in need, may we receive neighbor love from one another. When we are each empowered to serve the weary and the wounded, even if it's by staying home, may we exemplify neighbor love to one another. Loving our neighbor is the golden rule. Its time is now. It's always been time. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Go and do thou likewise. Do not be afraid. God is with you.